Hello and welcome to the Surfing Podcast, the greatest podcast, now recorded on a new soundboard that I'm just figuring out, so bear with me. This is Dan. Thank you for tuning in. This week, let's get right into it. I want to start off talking about the Stab in the Dark All-Stars video. It just came out, today's Tuesday, but I guess it was released on Monday? Sunday or Monday. I watched it online. I watched the premiere online because you can watch it for free, and now it's currently featured on iTunes and Amazon and where else, and it's $9.99. It's $10. It's a $10 video, but if you wait, 8 to 14 months, it will be free sometime in the future on, like, YouTube or whatever, so if you're cheap, do that. But I did thoroughly enjoy the Stab in the Dark video, and I wanted to talk about it this week because I normally complain about all things surfing, and I'm like a bitchy, grouchy old kook, but, like, I really got a kick out of the Stab in the Dark video. It's about an hour long. I watched it last night. Like I said, the premiere was, they had a free premiere online because they were showing it live in Hawaii, and you could watch it on Stab's website, but you couldn't fast forward. You could just watch the video, which is kind of annoying, but I watched it, and it was really, really, really interesting. It was basically Stab each year for the last, 3 to 5 to 700 years, gets like a handful of like 6 or 8 or 10 of the best shapers in the world from all over the world. And then they pick one really good pro surfer to get the boards made for them. And the shapers don't know who they're making them for. They just know like the height and the weight of the surfer. And then they just make them these boards and they take them somewhere neat, like, Australia or Japan or South Africa. And they surf and videotape them and take pictures of them and have awkward interviews. And then at the end, the surfer, shits on basically all the boards and then picks one board that he says works good, and then that person's the winner. So Paisel's won a couple times, I believe. I don't know if JS won. I don't know. Some people, all the great shapers have placed high on the thing and usually done well, and it's very exciting. But it's usually just one guy. This year they did a best of. They were going to have the four, I guess it's been four previous years, so they were going to have the four previous Stab in the Dark test pilots. It was going to be Julian Wilson, Dane Reynolds, Mick Fanning, and Jordy Smith. And I guess it seems like Julian was too busy or backed out of it, because they kind of make fun of him in the video. But then they did get Mick, Dane, and Jordy, and they're going to fly to beautiful South Africa to ride all these boards. And this time, I think it was only 4 or 6 shapers or something like that, like one wild card shaper or something like that. It was previous winners. And then the guy from Pukas, and I think that was it. But anyway, previous winners, they have the boards. It's kind of a bummer. Like the second day of filming, I guess, Nick Fanning's knee, melted and exploded, and he had a knee, fell on a wave doing a turn. His knee gave out and he had to go in. So that was a bummer. But then Jordy and Dane did a good job of picking up the slack and filling it out. But I thought it's a really neat thing to watch. Because I feel like all the surfing, not all, but I feel like a chunk of the, especially professional, I feel like the chunk of the professional surfing media and news and stuff and content that we're being, spoon-fed is garbage. And I don't mean spoon-fed. I'm not like a conspiracy theory. Like, yeah, man, they want you dumb, and they're just giving you just not enough information. That's not true. I mean, it's the product that the powers that be that make the pro surfing stuff, the content they're making is just kind of watered down and garbage for the most part. There are glimpses of funny things, though, from time to time, I will admit. But the Stab in the Dark, I think Stab just does such a great job every year of these videos, and I thought the All-Star video was no exception, especially they did such a great job after losing Mick, and it sounded like it was a big cluster F to get everything coordinated with, 3 or 4 surfers and shapers and whatever all over the world. And of course half the boards arrived late in the video, and other funny things happen. But what I really liked, I like the interviews with the surfers. Not even about the, there's not, it's, I mean, they talk about the boards a lot and complain and make fun of the boards, but in a jokey way. And you feel like some of the guys are kind of more dicks than others. I think Jordy is kind of ruthless on the boards, and Mick's kind of happy-go-lucky for the times that he's in it, but he'll see if a board works or not. But Dane Reynolds is funny to watch in the videos, because the previous one he did, I think he crapped on the boards a little bit harder in the shapers and said, oh, this one sucks, and this one sucks, this one sucks. This time around, you can see Dane, whenever he talks in the videos, in the video about the boards, he'll be like, well, I felt it would work really good at like Salt Creek or somewhere else. He'll either make fun of himself and say he's surfing like shit and he can't really judge the board because he fell on every wave or got snaked or whatever, or he'll say like something the board probably would do better somewhere else or if he rode it a second time. So I thought that was a kind of a fair way to do it, because those guys are just, it's just neat to watch a video of three of the really highest level surfers in the world just kind of hanging out and then basically free surfing and Mick and Jordy, you know, are still like are fresh off of being contest surfers. Jordy's still like, you know, in a world title hunt. So they're, it's just funny because like Dane talks about it, how they get like two or three times more waves than him as a session because they're just like basically wave monster, like, you know, just catch everything destroyers. And Dane is just bobbing around on the inside and then going to the outside and then back to the inside. And he's just not as aggressive when he's trying to catch waves. But it's interesting to watch because if you watch, like, it's watching like three world-class surfers kind of just surf kind of cruisy and mellow, and then kind of watching Dane kind of half-ass it, because you can tell like on sessions where he's like feels, I don't know, I'm guessing, but like where he feels like he's kooking it or whatever, he'll just do really funny shit. Like he'll surf a wave really bad, and then at the end he'll do like a half-ass like alley-oop on a section that like regular surfers would not even be able to pull like the best turn of their life, let alone an alley-oop off of. So it's just very humbling to watch like a surfer like Dane Reynolds surfing at like 10% and like purposely kind of going down the line, kind of like not doing much, still do better maneuvers than on the greatest day of most surfers' lives or abilities. So that's really cool. And then they have a part. It's always fun to hear Dane Reynolds talk because he's like actually awkward and humble, and you got. I mean, he's not a dumb guy. It seems like he gets who he is and what his deal is. But I always do feel like he turns like the awkward humble up for the cameras because he probably doesn't want to come off as a dick and be like, well, I know I rip, so fuck you, kooks, and I'm a millionaire. Eat shit, you know. But he's very self deprecating, which I get a kick out of. But also he had a couple like good points. He's saying like it's hard to make this movie, and you're going out and filming and basically in nature. It'd be like trying to shoot a movie in the middle of a crowded coffee shop or a mall and just like and getting mad because people were getting in the way or talking during shots and stuff like that. That's kind of like when you're surfing like somewhere crowded like J Bay or Lowers, trying to shoot a film clip. It's like you're at work, but you know, these people are there enjoying the waves. And then he makes a really good point, or half a point, and then he stops saying it, but why are we more entitled because we're superior surfers or superior at surfing to get these waves when other people shouldn't? Like, you know, does it make us, everyone's just riding, it's the same experience for everyone else, whether you're riding a wave going straight or doing like a 360 air alley-oop, it's like you're still just experienced riding a wave. So I thought that was really neat because you don't really hear surfers talk about that too much. I mean, in interviews, I'm sure they talk about it in real life when they're just being themselves. And then they went through towards the end, Jordy and Dane talk about board terminology, which I really got a kick out of because Dane is like, you know, it's hard to describe how boards work because we're basically using made up language, you know, like saying a board is this or that. There's not really terms. And then they sat down for a minute and tried to define what the terms were for like how surfboards work, like what it meant when a board tracks, tracks too much. And basically Dane was like, it feels like, you know, tracking on a board, if a board feels like it tracks in the face, it means that it gets in a groove like on a train track and it won't come out of that groove. It'll go in a definite direction on the wave, but not the way that you want, you know. And they talked about what boards that feel skatey when they're just kind of too loose and too squirrely all over the place, and knifey rails. And just, it was just really funny to hear guys that like really know a lot about surfboards or how they work or how to use surfboards, but admit that that's really not that much of a science. It's more of a, you know, it's more of a touch and feel kind of thing, and it's a kind of an arbitrary way we use to describe how boards work, even at a high level. But it's funny, early on they're pulling all the boards out of the bag, and Dane and Mick notice that the boards, because it's three surfers, each shaper makes an identical board but like different dimensions for each of the three surfers. But Dane and Mick notice on one of the boards that the angle on their fins is off, like the angle, like how one set of fins, I think on Dane's board, are more straight up, the one on Mick's are more splayed out. And then they say like, and then Dane's like, oh, this board works exactly the opposite of how you would expect these fins to work with these fins. So I thought that was cool. They're noticing these little intricate details, but at the same time, even noticing the details, the boards work the opposite of how they thought they were going to work because of the detail that they noticed. And then also my favorite part of the video is that this literally was the first time I've ever seen Jordy Smith hold a board and put together a board and then ride a board that actually had his model fins on it. I've only seen Jordy in pictures and videos riding, you know, the standard Almeric fins. And I have a set of his fins because I'm a bigger person and I have the size, the Jordy large ones, the older ones, the green ones. And they work good, but I've never seen a picture. I think maybe when the fins first came out, one picture of Jordy on them doing an air or something. I've never seen Jordy use a board with his fins on them. So I was neat because he's got the new version of his fins that are what are they? They're like cow print. They're white and black, you know, spots like cow printed, which I thought are really cool. But I just thought it was really neat because I always wondered about that. Like the guy has his own fin model that he supposedly, you know, designed himself and loves, and his dad's a shaper, so he's probably pretty in tune with his equipment. But I've never seen him use those fins in a contest. What the fuck? But yeah, that was super cool. And just like I said, just seeing these guys kind of goof around and surf laid back, and even when they're surfing, you know, at 50%, the stuff they do, and on brand new boards, is super funny and fun to watch. And it's fun to watch guys like on boards that they say like, oh, the nose is too thin or too narrow, or this board doesn't suit me right or whatever. And then you can see them not surfing as well on the wave as they'd want to surf. It's a strange thing to watch really talented surfers. Like, they're still surfing very, very well, but it's super neat to watch, you know, kind of like, you know, pro surfers who are so usually just so like, I don't know, like kind of stiff and rigid and like just everything has to be perfect. Just kind of letting themselves like kook around and have fun, which I appreciate it very much. But yeah, the video is $10 and I don't want to give away who won. I mean, I'm sure if you go to the comments online on any video and or anywhere the video is placed, somebody's like, oh, so-and-so won. But yeah, it's neat to watch. And then the shaper that wins, they go and interview him at the end, and they kind of, you know, mix chit chats with them for a couple minutes, and then actually tells them he won. And the shaper's a very famous and well-respected, you know, shaper, and you can tell the guy is like, he hadn't won it before, he's like pretty stoked, he's like, oh man, this is pretty awesome. And you can see him like, he doesn't get choked up and cry or anything, but it's like it's a cool little moment in a video. So I don't know, like I said, for surf media and surf content, I feel like everything is just so stilted and watered down and boring and generic. I think Stab, like I said, does a really good job of making you feel like, you know, you're seeing a little bit behind the scenes and being a fly on the wall for something cool. So I highly recommend it. And that does not come as I'm not being paid by them to say that or anything like that. I hate everything normally, so I just thought that was cool. And that brings us to the other thing about surf media. This week or last week, when Holly Eva started, and then Sunset, I really want to watch. I like watching the contest at Sunset because Sunset's so big and terrifying to me, like such a big playing field. I went to fire up the WSL app because I was going to watch some heats and cast them into my TV. And it turns out the WSL has turned back on the email gating feature on their app. That means when you turn on their app to watch videos or watch the contest live, they want you to sign up for a WSL account. It's called email gating. I work in social media. I know about this. It's like it's a campaign to gather emails to be able to market to you more directly. Here's the problem. The only people using the WSL app at this point are people that already know about the WSL, already like surfing, and are trying to watch surf fucking contests. They're already fans. You've already won them over. They're not new customers, all right? They're just, the WSL tried this bullshit, like, whenever the WSL launched, I should look it up, like, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, whenever they rebranded and launched, and the WSL launched the app for the first time, and even on their website, they tried to do the same thing. They tried to email gate you and try and get you to start an account and have to be logged into the account to watch videos. They quickly abandoned it because it was bullshit. My whole thing is, it's not like the WSL is running ads like, hey, watch our contest and download our app to see surfing non-surfers or people who have never watched surfing. It's really cool. If that was the case, then I would understand the technology and using the technology to email gate and capture the contact information and information on new fans and new customers. The problem is the only people watching the WSL right now are fucking surfers and pre-existing surf fans. That's the god honest fucking truth. And I'll tell you why. The reason is because they must not have a webcast sponsor or a decent one paying that much for the Triple Crown. Because if they had a webcast sponsor, what they would be doing is 24/7 pumping those videos out on Facebook and Instagram and like live feeds and this and that, and having links everywhere leading you back down the funnel of going and watching the live feed, so they could show how great the numbers were and how much the ROI, the return on investment, was for their sponsors. And they're not doing that. So if anyone had paid them a significant amount of money to do the webcast, they wouldn't be email gating them or making them difficult to watch a webcast. They'd be shoving the webcast down our throat. The bummer is that Holly Eva had good waves and some exciting shit happened, and Sunset had good waves and some exciting shit happened, and Honolulu Bay had some exciting shit happen, and Krissa Moore just won her fourth world title. And I only know from watching pictures and reading recap articles on Surfline, Surfer, and Stat. So I follow the WSL, you know, like on Instagram and stuff, and I know they put out a lot of stories and content, but that's The content's usually pretty garbage, although Caipo Guerrero, who's one of the favorites here at the Surfing Podcast, put out a funny little video on predicting who was going to win and just had like a little funny, like, you know, little 30-second thing with music. It was really well done and really cool. The WSL should lean towards doing more of those kind of videos than these lame, like, surf rap things with people that, like, God bless the guy from The Bachelor, and I know he surfs pretty good. He surfs good and for, like, a non, you know, hardcore surfer guy, but him... And the brown haired girl are just so annoying. I don't give a shit about listening to them. Just give the commentating jobs to guys that are like recently out of the surf industry or off the tour. You know what I mean? Or guys that are lingering on the tour trying to get back on. Like, just hire surfers for surfing talking. It's not sports, and even sports, even the highest level, the NFL, the NBA, they have like Larry Bird and, you know, Shaq and all these motherfuckers and Terry Bradshaw. Then they hire ex-football and basketball players to do the commentary and be the face of their network. And it's just better. It's probably not as polished as a perfect, you know, person that's like a trained actor or taking, you know, Hollywood hosting classes or whatever. But it's just not working. And it sucks to watch. And I don't like it. I can't stand it. And I wish they would just cut it out. But yeah, email gating your app is the dumbest shit in the world because you're not getting information on new fans. You're just keeping up people who don't want to go dig up the account with the burner email address they made several years ago. And I'm just not going to log in. I'll just wait. I won't watch it this year. And I love surfing. I'm not going to watch that shit. It's stupid. And it's a dumb way to treat your fans. Like, the fan base of the WSL, all they have going right now is they have surfers that love surfing that want to watch surfing. They have not cracked the fucking code or the egg on how to attract non-surfers because the product they make is fucking boring. The wave pool contest was the best shot at making like the actual sport of surfing interesting to watch. That was fucking boring even by hardcore surfers and probably, you know, casual surfers too. It's not exciting. It's fucking dumb. And they just need to like do something else. Speaking of that, coming back full circle, I talked earlier about Stab in the Dark, and I got to tell you, I was thinking about this week, past couple of weeks, like, I complain about a lot of stuff, but like about surfing, but like, you know, media wise and industry wise, like just from an outsider, like just person who loves surfing that does, you know, surfs their own little local break as poorly as I do, but like, you know, consumes surfing content and media. Like I'm old, but I'm the target demographic. I'm someone who loves surfing. I have a job. I can buy products related to surfing. I buy surfboards and wetsuits and wax and all the shit that the industry is selling. But as someone who loves it, like the WSL, they pump out crap. It's crap and it's mediocre. Not all of it, but more than 51% is junky, and it's just makes the sport look stupid. On the other side of that, I thought I'd never say this, but more and more, like I said, I've been thinking about this. I really have to give it up to Stab, Stab Magazine or Stab Mag or whatever website or .com, stabmag.com or whatever. Whatever you want to consider Stab to be, but it's the Australian kind of like cheeky, you know, sarcastic surf website, you know, thing. And now they're making branded content, and I think they're launching a TV show and a talking TV show in Australia on Fuel or something this month. They do a great fucking job. Stab does a great job catching like the zeitgeist and the essence of what's going on in surfing now and how people feel about surfing. Yeah, sometimes it's too much, and their content section is a fucking Vietnam of just garbage troll people that are just vitriolic trash talking nonstop. But they've also, even with that, Stab picked up on that early on, and I think 1 year they had awards for like the best commentators and actually interviewed some of the commentators, which when you're trolling and putting trolley comments and funny comments on the website, to have the website actually contact you and like want to spotlight or highlight you is like the biggest goal that you have. You wouldn't be putting those comments out there if you weren't trying to get likes or attention or raise your profile in some way. And so, you know, Stab realized that, and they used it a plus. You could see that as being a negative, but they took a negative and made it into an opportunity and made a fun thing out of it. And I just think they do that with a lot of their stuff. You know, they're not perfect, and, you know, they are, sometimes they're kind of grating and annoying, but I think they do a really, 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 really good job at like splitting the difference between tongue in cheek and then actually having a little bit of like surfing, you know, decent surf journalism and content there, especially because it's just like, they kind of like, they tell it how it is, you know, with the knob turned up a little bit more on the sarcasm and the whatever. But at the same time, it's like, it's interesting. It's fun because It's sloppy. It's not perfect. It's a little bit sometimes even like raunchy, but it's like it's how actual fucking surfers are and how actually people that consume the fucking, you know, content and participate in the sport actually act and talk and, you know, think and this and say and it, they write and produce content that's like speaks to how surfers actually think or, you know, contemporary and otherwise. And I think they do the best job of doing that. And like I said, yeah, they're kind of annoying and, you know, adolescent at time. But like, yeah, surfers are annoying and adolescent at time. So it works out perfectly. They just do a great job. If the WSL was really smart, they would just buy Stab from, I don't know. I'm assuming Stab is just a front owned by like Billabong or one of the conglomerate, you know, clothing company or chains or whatever in Australia. I haven't Googled enough to look that up, but I heard that one time. But that sounds about right. But they just kill it. They do such a good job of just being kind of silly and irreverent and then having actually good, you know, whenever good videos come out, they post the good videos like that the, you know, pros and companies release, and then they make funny comments about them and they do commentary about the contest, and it's not perfect and like they're kind of, some of it's kind of goofy, but like they do point out the fact that like, you know, it looks like a couple people threw heats this year to have better chances to like get in the finals or knock out the person that was going to win the world title or whatever, especially on the girls side of it. In the last couple of girls' contests for WSL, like that's interesting. At least someone's saying it because everyone else is thinking it, so fuck, they might as well say it. But yeah, I do get a kick out of Stab, and I think they really are doing the culture and the, you know, just surfing in general a service by keeping it fun and light and cool versus just this corporate. I've talked about this before. I don't think corporate things are bad, but this you know, in the most generic, like cliched version of saying it, but like just the corporate schlock that the WSL puts out. It's like it's got a slick wrapper, but it's just there's just nothing there. It's just like I'd rather have something that's like, you know, it's like having an old board that's like maybe a little bit beat up and has a couple of fixed dings or whatever. You know, the deck's all, you know, delaminated or caved in from your feet, but the board still works good. And you put it in your garage or wherever, and you only ride it, you know, once or twice a year when the wave's really good. It's like that's what Stab's content is versus like a brand new, you know, shiny pop out fun board from, you know, China that works like shit and just makes you look like a kook. But yeah, the WSL just really makes us all look like kooks and it's annoying, and I wish they would up their game. Yeah, best case, if they're smart, they would just buy Stab and then use it, but that wouldn't work because if they bought Stab, what would happen is all the guys at Stab would get a bonus, you know, or get a little bit of a raise. They get big heads and then not try as hard, and they wouldn't want to work. They wouldn't be able to work within the constraints of the media company that owns the WSL, and the Stab product would go to shit within the first, I'd say 6 months, probably 3 months. Stab wouldn't be the same thing, and it'd just be dead and gone. And that will probably happen someday because it's a cool thing. Someone will buy it and then destroy it. But until then, they keep pumping out fun stuff, and I hope they keep it up. I don't know. I like surfing. I like watching surfing. And things related to surfing. I just wish, like I said, the email gating thing. I know it's just like, oh, just enter a burner email, like a trash Hotmail email account and log into the WSL. I just won't do it. I just give up. I'd rather actually. Also, the waves have been good the last few weeks, so I'd rather go surfing than watch surfing. So fuck it. If I'm gonna boycott the WSL the next couple of weeks or the weeks to do it here in Southern California because we had a bunch of fun waves. Yesterday we had a first decent like northwest swell, and I drove down in the morning after I dropped my son off at school to go surfing, and it was Huntington Beach does not hold swell very well, so it was just like, you know, it was like probably 4 to 6, but when I went down I looked at it for like 10-15 minutes from the parking lot, it was annoying. It was like a long period swell, and it was really northwest, so there's a really sideways current. And it was really high tide when I was looking at it as well. But the worst part was it was one of those swells that was kind of lully. That was like filling in. It was kind of had a lot of lulls. So there were like literally 2 foot waves and then 6 foot plus closeouts that were coming in and nothing in between, it looked like. I was looking at north side because that's where I parked. But south side looked better, but it looked like there was like a perfect peaks like down the beach, like towards Huntington Street and like, you know, Lake Street. But the current was so bad. It's one of those things where you look at that peak, you're never going to be able to stay on that peak long enough for a set to come in. You're going to be battling the current the whole way. So I tried to sneak down to Salt Creek because I thought Creek might be good. But I was wrong. Salt Creek in Southern Orange County does well on a high tide, but there's this weird, like, there's the sand in the middle. Like, I like to surf between the point and middles because you get a lot of in-between waves, like lefts and rights, and then the bigger sets at the point the guys fall on the first turn, you can grab those waves. It's really fun to surf, but there's the sand is too built up in the middle there, and it's weird, and there was, like, a half a football-sized patch of, like, kelp that had washed in from somewhere, like, the really annoying small kelp pieces and then the ribbony kelp that gets around your leash. So it just wasn't fun. And there was a sewage spill 2 days ago. So every 2 minutes on the loudspeaker, there were two lifeguard jeeps in the point at the little, with the little lifeguard towers saying, "There is a current sewage spill. You are surfing in sewage. Please come in," every 2 minutes for the 2 hours I surfed out there. And I was just paranoid that I was going to get, like, you know, eye amoeba brain cancer or something. My sinuses were going to explode. But I'm all well and fine today. So F you, lifeguards, with your annoying warnings for my own well-being. I showed you. I don't know. So, yeah, it didn't look good at Huntington yesterday. And I talked to people that surfed there and said it was fun. It was just a bit of a current, and Salt Creek wasn't good, and it was a little bit windy. It wasn't completely sheet glass, and Huntington was sheet glass all day till at least 4. And then in the afternoon, it got like barely rippled until dark. So I surfed Huntington this morning. The swell's dropping off fast. It was only probably like 3 or 4 foot. And that's not Hawaiian. It's American or United States or whatever, California. So it was a bigger set. It was like a couple head high, like one, you know, barely an inch overhead sets. But it was kind of, you could tell the swell was dying. But we've got waves coming this weekend and next week, so I'm all fired up about that. And I'm just going to be a short episode because I'm testing out the new Zoom. Got to see what the name of the thing is. I posted a picture on Instagram. It's the Zoom L8. The Live Track L8. It's a five-track recording board with a built-in SD card recorder in there and outputs for 4 headphones, and it has a jack that you can plug an iPhone or Android phone in to, and it takes the phone call from your phone, puts it in my headphones, and then puts my voice through the speaker and into the phone, so I can have phone guests now. So in coming weeks and months, I'll have phone guests on the show, which will be super exciting or terrible and boring, who knows. But yeah, this is just a quick short episode. I really wanted to sing the praises of the Stab in the Dark. I really wanted to call the WSL stupid and then say how good a job Stab was doing. And also Jack Robinson won the Sunset Contest. I know from pictures, not video. Thanks a lot, WSL. And he qualified for the World Tour, and I'm super stoked because Jack Robinson, I think, is a really good surfer. He surfs good waves, you know, small waves really good and well, and he surfs big waves well, and I just think he's a good kid, and he's been trying to qualify for a bunch of years now, so I'm stoked on that. And the same thing, Ethan Ewing, I think, qualified as well. So those are two regular foot Australians who I really enjoy watching, even, you know, and then other people qualify too, good for them. But I'm just giving a shout out to those two guys. But yeah, this has been this quick episode of the Surfing Podcast. If you have any questions, comments, whatever, shoot us an email or a Facebook or Instagram message. We're at the Surfing Podcast, and the website's surfingpodcast.com. And if you haven't already, go on iTunes and leave us a 5-star review and a nice comment review if you could. And check out our website. I think we will have some t-shirts for sale before Christmas or right up leading up to Christmas. And I think I'm going to add a Patreon thing to our website as well. So if you want to throw a few bucks our way each month, because this stupid thing was like the Zoom recorder, this deck thing was like $400, but it replaces like 4 different pieces of equipment and lets me do phone call interviews super easy. So it was worth it because I will use it for this podcast, and we'll use it up at the comedy theater, at the Amazing Comedy Theater, where we record these things. So don't want to say it's going to pay for itself, because it probably won't, but it's a cool thing to have that will make recording podcasts and other forms of audio for this show and other things that we do at my work easier. And it's a neat toy, but I think that Zoom did a really good job. This thing was really easy to use. I mean, I watched like 2 or 3 videos on YouTube, and I was pretty much up to speed on everything and how to make it work. So that's it. Yeah, for the Surfing Podcast, this has been Dan. If you have any topics you'd like me to cover or something you want me to shout out, send us a message, and we'll talk to you soon. Thanks.